IT businesses in Sacramento, California.
From somewhere deep in the cloud and the corners of the earth, this is the Killing It Podcast, with a focus on helping you make sense and dollars of all things IT, with your hosts, Dave Sobel, Ryan Morris, and Carl Polachuk.
Welcome to episode 74 of the Killing It, Podcast. Much better. So
we were apparently a little off last week.
So it's interesting. Episode 74. We are this close. And 75, like, is like gold or diamond or something. But 74 is nothing. It's like, you know, Jeep flatbed pickup.
It's almost a sign of really impressive accomplishments. Call us back next week.
Right. It's exactly. Almost impressive.
It's right. It'll be impressive next week, but today is kind of nothing, really.
Well, it's a fun topics, but
it is definitely fun technology topics, because our industry, in the midst of all of this downturn and upheaval and disruption, continues to churn out some really fascinating technologies. I have often said, you know, the only job skill that's required to thrive in technology is the ability to forget everything you've ever known and learn all new stuff again this year.
Plus, I'll give the listeners a preview of the way that this all cuts. So we actually screwed up our scheduling a little bit this week. So Ryan and I were on a call yesterday that we thought was the time of the podcast, and it didn't work out. So I got a preview of Ryan's thinking on some of this, and it's like, oh, this is going to be a good show. Like, he's got some thoughts for this one.
Sometimes we go back and forth like 52 times before a show, and other times it's like, I have no idea what these guys are going to say.
Right.
Which makes it very fun and interesting, because, you know, I was having this conversation with a client this week about the virtues of scripted content versus extemporaneous content. And I think that the reason people come here and listen is you want some unvarnished truth, right? You just want to know, like as though we were in the lobby bar at our favorite conference and we were all discussing the topics of the day, like not for on the record, what do you really think about this thing? That's what we're trying to do here.
But see, not the lobby bar. I've decided I want to hang out in that bar like two blocks down with the patio, because that's always a better place than the same hotel bar.
Exactly. I will say, so that kind of reminds me of when some of the folks and I, when we were in Manchester, we wandered down like two blocks and went to this little pub because we wanted like real beer. And what we found was local food that, like, you can't get anywhere else. So, you know.
Which, in the spirit of, like, remembering the good things about the good old days, right? I've always said half the reason to go anywhere is for the food. And the other half is for your work, for tourism, for all of the other things, right? Half the reason is for the good food. And it's never, ever inside the actual convention. Right.
It's never on campus. You have to leave campus.
Exactly. Well, let's go do a show. So we have actually two AI topics today, but the first one I want to talk about is about whether or not you would trust an AI widget to represent you in court. And the article that we're going to point to is, I think it's interesting because there's several of these apps that basically, the first thing that struck me is you have to be pretty brave to say, you know what, I'm going to go to court and I'm going to let the chatbot help talk me out of a ticket or help talk me out of something. And now, obviously, you don't want to have this tool represent you in a murder trial, but on little things, it's never occurred to me to do this. And so you've got a whole generation of people growing up trusting that the AI chatbot is going to get the job done. I think that's really interesting.
That's a no, hell no from me. Like, first off, I've programmed before. Absolutely not. But then the other time is I have to laugh and go, like, you say the little things, right? I will freely admit the last time I needed a lawyer for something like a traffic ticket, you know who I called? Because it was in more middle Virginia, I called the down home boy who knows the judge, who worked the, like, No bot is going to deliver that value. Look, it's relationships, right? But I paid that guy to make that go away because he knew the right people to call. And you know what? Magically it did. No bot's going to solve that problem.
See, that suggests perhaps a very interesting deviation for Act Two of this conversation, which would be, would you be okay with human lawyers arguing in front of a bot judge? Because if the judge cannot be influenced by good old-fashioned homegrown relationships and it's just based on the facts, I think you might fast forward the adoption of the lawyer side of things. But I think this is more relevant, more reasonable than you do, Dave. And the reason that I think this is, talk to all the lawyers who you know in your life. Ask them, what do you do? Like just a day in the life of a professional legal attorney, right? What do you do? Very much of the time is spent in research. Very much of the time is spent in relevancy on court citations and then preparing documents, briefs, etc., to be submitted to communicate that kind of information. The stock in trade of being a good lawyer is not that you have a brilliant legal theory nobody else has ever thought of. It is the ability to find and cite relevant precedent. And I guarantee that AI on a keyword search is going to be oodles more efficient at that than your typical lawyer sitting in a library downstairs digging through the stacks.
Well, look, you didn't ask me if I wanted a cyborg lawyer. Which the answer to that is like, do I want one who's assisted by these technologies? Absolutely, 100%. Do I want like a lawyer who's got his army of bots around him? That is like he walks in with all the droids from Phantom Menace and marches it. Like, yes, I want that. But do I want to remove the human? Absolutely not. I want to use the technology to make the people better, more efficient, faster, go deeper, do all the manual research. Like, I want to do all of that stuff. But remove, absolutely not.
As in a previous conversation we've had related to this, AR, not VR. Let's enhance the humans. Let's not replace them.
I do have to say that the article we point to, the drone looks very much like it came out of Star Wars. I'm just saying.
Yes, he does. So see, Carl, I think you have the relevant experience on this. You were the first of us who said, okay, I read all the articles. I understand all this stuff. I'm going to get in the back seat of an autonomously piloted.
Well, that's true.
Right? That seems to me very much like the same thing. The jeopardy is physical, not legal, but there is still jeopardy getting in the back of one of those autonomous cars.
So it's interesting because part of this is that they're saying, again, there's always the, you know, where do our jobs go? They're saying 114,000 legal jobs could be automated in the next two decades. Now, that may or may not be true, but it seems to me that what happens with lawyers is they never subtract, they always multiply. And so this would be the first time in history that, you know, you actually eliminated some of these jobs. But they're looking at this as there's a growing number of these automated technologies, and you have to wonder whether it's a car with your physical life being in danger versus, you know, $100 in fines or whatever, where do you decide that you trust AI?
See, I think it comes back to that question of, do you understand context or can you just locate keywords? That, like what the industry is referring to as, you know, natural language processing. If we can get to a point where the bot can understand context and relative importance as opposed to just absolute matches, I think that that's closer than we think it is from a developer's point of view.
So I always look, when I think about, you know, AI and whatever, I look at the search at Google, which in my personal opinion, Google is almost useless unless you're looking to buy something, right? I mean, if you want to learn new things, like you say, oh, I've invented some new food and I want to figure out what does it take to produce this food in mass and get it to the market and be legal and da, da, and you start doing a search, all you're gonna get is food supplies and this and that. Until you get into certain keywords that get you into the inside knowledge of that industry, you won't even get usable search results.
See, I disagree with that because, and admittedly, the immediacy factor is hitting in because I've spent the last 24 hours fighting my own internal network and had to debug a million things, and so Google has been my friend. But like, anytime if I'm looking to understand something, sure, I may not get it right on the first four searches, but with continued refinement and reading, I find that I'm able to find a lot of interesting deep thinking or experts in those fields that can teach me information about that. And I certainly can learn a ton of stuff off YouTube videos. I can learn some bad stuff too, but I can learn, you can get, experience and insights delivered in all kinds of interesting ways. I think it's just a matter of knowing that you have to go at it more than once. I don't expect to get it on the first, third, or even fifth search. I know that each search is going to take me to understand more and more to get to better data.
Again, part of that is you got to learn the language, right?
Yeah, sure,
I don't know the language of the law, so me finding the answer will be much more difficult.
But then again, I did see a tweet this week that I thought was painfully accurate and funny. The guy's tweet was, I chalk up 75% of my professional skills to being good at Google. And I think that there are people who are like that, right? Like, again, two or three pages into two or three searches, you can find relevant things. But it comes back to, I think Dave had the answer in the beginning of this conversation, technology to enhance and empower the thinking human on the front end, as opposed to the technology doing this work for you, because context and the relative importance is the thing that the bot's not going to understand. That's what a lawyer is for, I know this set of circumstances. I know of a relevant case that I can cite. Let's go out and find that thing with the assistance of technology.
Right. And that's where, I see that as a perfect match. And I want, my cyborg lawyer, yes, please. But do I want, the robot drone? No, thank you.
All righty. Very good. So enough of that. It's time to move on. Dave.
Well, this one, as the resident gamer on the podcast, this one fit right within my wheelhouse. We have to comment on Apple versus the maker of Fortnite, Epic Games. For those that are not tracking this, first off, you have to go watch the video because it is such a perfect recreation of the 1984 ad from Apple. But Epic Games moved against Apple and their App Store by pushing an update to the Fortnite game that allowed people to buy V-Bucks directly from Epic, circumventing the Apple Store. This is important because they additionally discounted V-Bucks so that they have finally made it so that there is some argument around the value of the currency so that you can save money by buying direct versus through paying the fees from Apple. This has resulted in, at the same time that they made this move, they were then banned on the App Store. Epic filed lawsuit against Apple and Google, and Apple, to Trump making this game even more interesting, is also then threatening to pull Epic's ability to develop their Unreal Engine. The Unreal Engine, if anybody's not aware of, powers a whole bunch of video games. Additionally, it's used in filmmaking. They've been using it in things like Westworld and The Mandalorian. So this is a technology that is kind of a core framework piece. So the stakes are getting higher and higher. And we've included two links in the show notes. One, I know, Ryan, it set you off right away.
Yes, it did. And see, this is the thing, right? From a person who plays video games point of view, I understand Epic's perspective. I understand that they don't want to have to pay the toll to get through the Apple Store into their user base. And since that Apple Store represents a vast proportion of their user audience, it feels as though there is anti-competitive monopolistic behavior going on. But every single human who is listening to this has a unique and individual experience with the concept of the value chain and the roles of different players in the sequence of the value channel. There are people who make things. There are people who sell things. There are people who buy, adopt, and use things, right? If you think of that as vendor, solution provider, and end user, the argument here that's actually going on is Epic says, I think it's unfair that A, you won't let me sell around you direct to my end user, and B, I don't think it's cool that you take a 30% slice. Now, to the average user, you're going to look at that and go, 30%? Okay, every single person on that is listening to my voice right now, ask yourself, how many times have you personally complained about the discounts and margins you make on reselling other people's products, right? If you are a dealer, you want 35, 40, 45 points off. You want an extra 8 to 15 points for deal registration. If you do the marketing and demand generation, hey, don't I qualify for extra? If I am a managed service provider and I listen to the powers that be in this industry, I have been told that if I do it well, I should expect to make 50% margins on products and services that I sell through to end users. Apple's only, quote unquote, taking 30. Now, they are a dealer. What value did they bring to Epic and all of the other publishers who are the software vendors who are selling through this channel? Well, they created a platform where they could deploy. They created market awareness, demand, and adoption. And they created the delivery mechanism for post-sales delivery of this stuff. I kind of feel like that deserves way more than 30 points of margin in the spirit of a value chain in the channel.
So it's interesting that you took it to compare here, because I wanted to, because this was the warm up and it's like, all right, this was not initially where my head was at, but let me then say, okay, Ryan, but if we're comparing them at some level to the channel and we're saying that they are, in my mind, I could argue pretty cleanly for distribution for this, distribution used to get super high margins, and over time pressure has reduced that over time. Apple is holding the line on this. Wouldn't there be a pretty solid argument for the fact that Epic is trying to open up new distribution channels via their, you know, direct or such, and so Apple, to be competitive, should be looking at re-examining that percentage.
Yes, but to the point that we have made strenuously in these conversations time and again, don't sell on discount, compete on value. Don't just undercut other channels of distribution based on price, but justify the value add you bring to this conversation. I don't disagree. Microsoft wants to sell direct, and through resellers, and through Lars and Mars, and through OEM relationships. They have multiple routes to market. And when they have the brand and the market clout, they make the most margin. But you know, if you want to get academic about this, there is a concept out there called Porter's Five Forces. If you're not familiar, it is a way to analyze and understand where in an industry does the gravity land. In other words, who makes the most money at any given time in a multi-tiered industry? Is it with the end user arguing for discounts? Is it with the branded manufacturer on known product equity? Is it on the dealer channel because that's where you have the local relationship and trust? All of those things are always in flux. Michael Porter's answer was, you can never just say this is the structure of an industry. You have to measure and understand where you are. I would argue at this point, brand A is Apple, brand B is Epic. Which one has more market clout?
So, a couple of points. First of all, I do have to say, when I hear people talking about Apple or Amazon or any of the other biggies and using the word monopoly, it's like, wait a minute. you can go direct in a company only worth a few hundred million can go up against a company worth a couple of billion, right? And you also say, well, okay, you're not going to be on Apple and you're not going to be on Google, but you will be on Android and you can go direct. And it's like, I'm sorry, monopoly just doesn't fit there anymore. The other point I'd make, and this is sort of relevant to what Ryan was saying, what's a reasonable amount to pay your salesperson, right? Is it 30% of profit, 10% of gross, oh, 30%, that has a ring to it. Where have I heard that recently, right? And I do think there are times when these companies, and Amazon's my favorite example, take more than their share, right? Yeah. Amazon will clearly take 55% and then make it so unprofitable for you to sell through them that, you know, they will knock you out of business. Apple's not trying to do that. And on the other hand, why do companies sell through Amazon? Why do they sell through Apple? Because that's where all the customers are.
Well, right? Yeah, for precisely the same reason that anybody sells through Walmart or through Costco or through any other retail.
Well, and I would say that the seven syllables that define the last 5 years are disintermediation. Like, you are being removed from this channel, right? You say, oh, I don't want to go. I don't want to sell through the channel. I want to sell direct. Okay, great. There's a price for that. And Microsoft has kind of learned the lesson. Like, we want to sell direct, but if we don't engage our partners, they go off and sell something else. So it turns out we have to engage those partners, even if we don't give them as much money as we gave them before.
Well, look, it is an element of defining what the market is. Like, I mean, if I'm talking about, you know, smartphone platforms, well, it's a duopoly, right? there are two, and they are leveraging their position to keep other marketplaces from being able to be formed. You can't create, there are two marketplaces on the mobile platforms. Two. There's Google and there's Apple. And if you want to, like, and they are leveraging their positions in the mobile smartphone, or the mobile platform position, to also leverage this other space. That is the definition of kind of antitrust style behavior. Ryan, I get your point, and I understand, like, you know, the access to that, but it's also the combination of combining markets to keep position.
Well, so, absolutely it is. It is absolutely that. And markets have a very efficient way of paying you exactly what you are worth in the eyes of the marketplace. Distribution has very thin margins today. If they would like to earn much more margin, add more value. That's cool.
Very cool. All right. Time. Ryan, take us to topic number three, life after the pandemic.
Absolutely. And you can tell when we get really geeked out on a topic, because we talk over each other, we get into the details, the time flies. Obviously, that previous topic is one we'll come back to, but you guys, and you wouldn't be in this industry if topic number three was not just the stuff that you try to talk to your friends and family about on your free time, right? It is the Gartner hype cycle of emerging technologies for this year. The article that we're going to link to here gives a basic breakdown of what their, you know, A, the picture of the hype cycle, and then B, what are the main takeaways of where this technology is coming from. In our behind the scenes communication, we made a comment that I think is indicative of why this part of the hype cycle is so important. How many of these things that are on this curve emerging in the next 2 to 5 years have we personally never even heard of, right? Like, and we do this stuff for a living, and you go, wait, what? That's fascinating. And then you get into it and you're like, okay, get the logic, get the architecture, understand why they're making these things. What's fascinating to me is how many things that are in the 2 to 5 year to mass market adoption on this particular curve were not on this curve 2 years ago. AI, as a specific example, the development went from that's nifty to I'm really excited to, well, it won't get there anytime soon to, okay, we just hope it's a benevolent pastor at some point in the near future. That is the architecture of the hype cycle in a nutshell, right? We are approaching things. I will tell you guys, my number one takeaway from this was the concept of explainable AI. In other words, the machines can do whatever the machines can do, as long as the human can step in and go, whoa, hold on. How did you arrive at that math? Because I need to have some justification. There are an unlimited number of AI-oriented things to talk about. This gives us some time horizon. When will you, as a channel company, get paid for this stuff?
Well, there were two on here that jumped out at me that are where the plateau will be reached with less than 2 years, right? So these are things that will become into that L area where you can, you know, getting them from a productive perspective. And neither of them would have probably even shown up last year. The first was Health Passport, and the second was social distancing technologies. How quickly a market can change,
yeah,
right? where those were not even in existence or in thinking of, and now they will be at a level of productivity in less than 2 years from a technology perspective. So this is clearly the market moving to respond to needs. I was with you on a lot of them. It was interesting to me that a lot of this is in the 5 to 10 year. There also isn't a ton in that more than 10 years perspective. There were kind of only two that were in that, you know, that biodegradable sensors and DNA computing and storage were the two that are more than 10 years away. Yeah. Everything else is in that sort of 2 to 10 loosely.
So first of all, I'm shocked that Ryan didn't lead with a digital twin. Right, because he mentioned that 900 times in the last.
He does like that one.
Yes, I do.
But also, it to me anyway, it's very cool that part of what's going on here is that there's lots of different AI. It's making a distinction. There's not just one or two or six or 10 different kinds of AI. I love the bring your own identity, right? Like that's kind of cool. But I also think that it's interesting how many of these things. You say it won't happen for a couple of years. Gartner says this, but we know that is going to be exploded. Like what looked like 2 years is going to be 2 months, right? The world of AI is expanding way faster than old technologies or other technologies ever have.
Well, and if you go back to the one of the articles that I'm sure most people in our industry read a few years ago, the column on the blog, Wait, But Why? When he dug into the acceleration of development and the ability to not only answer questions faster, but to ask questions that previously could never have even been conceived. And that's where you get the hockey stick acceleration. And I remember the one visual in that blog that was, this is how we think we see and experience the hockey stick of accelerated capabilities. And it's a person standing in the middle of that curve going up, going, wow, that was really fast. He said, but time doesn't work like that. Time works like right now I'm standing right here looking over the edge into the unknown. I don't see the curve until the curve already happened. And then I look around and go, wait, what happened?
Yeah.
Like, how did that happen? Exactly where we are.
Well, and it's a perfect example is that we have so many things that a year ago, we're like, oh, who needs a camera on everything? And now, like, how many cameras have you bought in the last 6 months, right? Compared to a year ago, right? I mean, we have cameras absolutely everywhere, even though they're kind of in a shortage during the pandemic. But after the pandemic, this technology and many other technologies are just going to be everywhere. And, you know, part of it is, how do we control it? How do we use it? How do we make it useful? But there's also the stuff we don't see. And I think we talked about it before that, you know, sometimes when you look at like what, for example, what a 3D printer will put on the inside of a structure that you're never, ever going to see, like no one's ever going to see it, but it determines the optimal internal structure. A lot of AI is working like that. Like, what is the part that we never get to see, we never get to look at, we never get to examine, but out comes the ideal solution. At least we hope it is, and that we don't end up in court.
Exactly. And I take away, again, another really tactical thing in the spirit of super future thinking, the way that the hype cycle tends to make us look at things. There are some intensely individually relevant things. Serverless computing as a concept, which is essentially elastic or composable architecture that says in the web, I've got radically unlimited capacity for all of this technology and I don't have to buy any of it. I just use it on demand and the server and the network and the storage resources assemble on demand and dissolve when they are no longer needed. If we sell servers and networks and storage for a living, and that stuff no longer gets sold, we better find a new trick.
Well, I mean, I would easily make the argument of it. And I talked about this in my, if I was starting an MSP today kind of video, anybody starting out is not buying any of that stuff. Like I'll laugh and go like, as a guy who went from idea to implemented website, you know, and system in 5 days last week, what did I do? I did nothing that required anything other than, oh, I'm just going to drag some components around on a web page. And then I have a thing. It's there.
Well, you know. And I would say a word of caution that people who grew up in technology and have a 20-year history of building things may have a different approach. And I've had people send me their business plans and I'm like, nope, I'm scratching out these servers, right? I'm scratching out you buying anything that is not already built in the cloud that you rent for pennies as you need it. And, but you know, your mentality, you can't help you are where you came from. And you need to like figure out how do I look to a new future that is not based on that old way of looking at the world. It's hard to do.
Well, by the way, and just to close out on this one, I'm going to completely argue with bring your own identity. I already do that. I already every day bring my own identity to anything that I do.
I do not think far ahead of the rest of us.
I do not think this is an emerging technology, Gartner. I'm sorry. I just don't.
Very cool. Well, read the article. We would love to have your feedback. Also, share with all your friends. Thumb up every time you see it. You know, da 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 da. We appreciate you being here, and we look forward to, you know, whatever questions and feedback you have for us.
Let us know where you think we're wrong, too. Some of these are worth debating.
Very good. All righty. That will do it for episode 74 of the Killing It podcast. Much better.
Thanks for tuning in to the Killing It podcast. Please share with your friends and tell everyone to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all the podcast places. Join us next week and help us keep killing it in the technology business.